I'm Steve Doocy, and this is the Fox News Rundown.
Wednesday, October 24th, 2018. And Lisa Brady. President Trump pulls an October surprise ahead of the midterm elections, announcing plans for a middle-class tax cut.
I think it's smart for the president because he puts the ball in the Democrats' corner. He's kind of throwing out the bait to see what they do.
I'm Dave Anthony. As Democrats hope for a blue wave in 2018, a Trump supporter out with a new book about the president has some advice for them for the next election.
You want to beat this guy? You better understand what he did, and you better think about changing your operating model or changing your product come 2020, or he's going to beat you again.
And I'm Van Hipp. I've got the final word on the Fox News Rundown.
Less than 2 weeks to the midterm elections, President Trump is talking tax cuts again.
It'll be great for the middle class. It's going to be a tax reduction of 10% for the middle class. Business will not enter into it. And this will be on top of the tax reduction that the middle class has already gotten.
Perhaps aimed in part at countering any leftover criticism about the first round of tax cuts. In a Fox News poll just last week, less than half, 44%, have a favorable view of the 2017 tax reform law. And health care tops the economy among likely voters' concerns. So why talk about more tax cuts now?
When the economy is doing so well on all fronts, people tend to say, well, what do we need that for?
Brad Blakeman is a Republican strategist.
But I think it's smart for the president because he puts the ball in the Democrats' corner. You keep talking about the middle class and you're the champion of the middle class. Well, the president says this is targeted to the middle class. He's kind of throwing out the bait to see what they do and argue against having tax cuts for the middle class. But I will tell you this, that Republicans were always looking for tax cuts 2.0. The question is, what would they look like? Permanent tax cuts, more emphasis on middle class. So it's not a surprise that the president did this.
But doesn't this play into some of the Democrats' previous arguments, too? Because they said all along the first round of cuts weren't helping the middle class. That's what Democrats said.
No, they were helping. And that's why you step on the gas and you help them even more. It's incremental. And the president was smart. The tax cuts that were implemented were the first wave. And he always talked about a second wave of tax cuts. The question is, when would that happen? And because the economy is hitting on all cylinders, inflation is almost non-existent. Unemployment has never been lower for a whole class of people. And GDP is through the roof. So it makes sense to keep the momentum going. The question is, when is a good time to do that?
Some critics would say this is not a serious proposal. He mentioned a 10% cut for the middle class, that it could be just a rabbit he's pulling out of his hat to throw out there in the home stretch coming into the midterms.
Well, that's what they said about tax cuts the first time around, that it's pie in the sky, the Republicans will never do it. And we did it, and we did it across the board and complemented that with regulations, the easing of regulations and stepping on the gas on manufacturing and opening up coal plants. So I think the president likes to throw ideas out there. And as Larry Kudlow said, that this is the first of a beginning of a conversation to be had on tax cuts 2.0. So the president is throwing some red meat out there to see what the effect is, not only by Republicans, but Democrats.
But does it help anyone on midterm election day when so many people in the polls say they're more concerned about health care, for instance? They're not thinking about tax cuts. They're thinking about health care.
Well, health care is an important factor. As a matter of fact, I just got my notice for 2019, and my increase was $250 a month. So I'm a Republican. I'm a rabid Republican, but I am angry about health care. And as we approach the midterm elections, people are getting these notices. So personally, I would rather see a fix to health care before tax cuts because the first tax cuts were effective. But yeah, I think people are very, very concerned about their health care, not only today, but in the future.
So why isn't the president unveiling a new health care proposal instead of unveiling tax cuts 2.0?
I think it's very, very difficult to deal with health care in a lame duck. I think it's very difficult to deal with health care before the election. I think it'll be much easier for the president to do that if we retain the House and the Senate moving into the new year. But we don't know what's going to happen in 2 weeks. If we lose control of the House chances of getting health care fixed the way the president would have liked is almost non-existent.
And what about the cost of another round of tax cuts? Because that's another point Democrats have made consistently is, oh, this is blowing up the deficit, and I realize other things fuel that, but can we afford another tax cut is another thing that's going to be asked.
Well, this is the same questions that were asked the Ronald Reagan administration when he had his tax cuts. There's cause and effect. It takes a while to see the benefit of the tax cuts. We're not going to see them immediately, but we will see them in the long term. Why do I know that? Because GDP is through the roof. We are almost at full – we are at full employment under 4%. So while you're not going to see it immediately, you are going to see it in the next year. And all the economists believe that there is a cause and effect to major policy. You don't see it immediately, but you do see it as you did with the Reagan tax cuts.
Democrats like House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi hammered the first round of tax cuts, even after it spurred some companies to offer $1,000 bonuses to workers.
The bonus that corporate America received versus the crumbs that they are giving to workers to kind of put the schmooze on is so pathetic.
And more recently, former President Barack Obama has accused Republicans of being hypocrites on the deficit as he hits the campaign trail for Democrats in the midterms.
It's supposed to be the party supposedly of fiscal conservatism. Suddenly, deficits do not matter.
Jared Halpern covers Capitol Hill for Fox News Radio and says right now there's no time for Congress to vote on tax cuts because they're in recess until after the midterms.
The president started talking about this in terms of this was going to be done quickly. And again, there's not a way legislatively it would appear that this could be done super fast. Now, again, we'll see what happens after the election. Elections have consequences. The chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee, Republican Kevin Brady, who would be at the forefront of any tax bill in Congress, came out with a statement Tuesday that said we will continue to work with the White House and Treasury over the coming weeks to develop an additional 10% tax cut focused specifically on middle class families and workers to be advanced as Republicans retain the House and Senate. It's that last part that I really think voters or Republicans hope voters will focus on. This would be, you would think, incumbent on Republicans retaining control of the House. Otherwise, Democrats will be able to write their own sort of proposals. And there are tax cut plans that Democrats have put forward. By and large, though, they roll back some of the tax cuts that were put in place with the Republican bill. Remember, Democrats' complaint of that Republican bill is that it did not focus enough on the middle class, favored the wealthy too much. And so there have been suggestions from Democrats. Kamala Harris, a senator from California who is rumored to be considering a presidential run of her own in 2020, has a proposal that would roll back some of those higher end tax cuts, corporate tax cuts, and put in a middle class tax relief. So again, there's no proposal written yet. And it sounds like from this statement from Chairman Brady, it's something that is still very much in the early stages as they work with the White House and Treasury in the coming weeks to find some sort of additional 10% tax cut.
Have Democrats been pouncing on this as just, you know, an election ploy by the president to go ahead and re-raise this issue now in the home stretch leading up to the midterms?
Well, Democrats have been very critical of the tax bill that Republicans already passed. They have said that, you know, it is a tax cut that favors the rich over the middle class, that the lower income taxpayers did not get the same type of relief as the top higher end taxpayers did. So that has been part of their election messaging all along. You may also start to hear, remember we got last week that Treasury Department report that showed a rising budget deficit and projected rising deficits for the next few years that could top $1 trillion. So you're going to have Democrats who are going to wonder how an additional tax cut would not add to that deficit if you don't start rolling back some of the tax cuts that were put in place earlier, particularly on the higher end and even those corporate tax cuts that were put in place. So, you know, Democrats have been talking about it sort of generally. They don't have anything to respond to specifically yet because, again, there isn't a proposal out there other than the president saying he wants a 10% tax cut for the middle class. And Republican leaders in Congress now saying, great, we do too. Let's start working on it, and something that we could put forward if Republicans, as the chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee said, retain the House and Senate. So probably something that voters will hear a lot about in the next 2 weeks from a campaign strategy. But as far as actually getting a tax bill completed before the new Congress were to come in, that seems very difficult to do, particularly in the political climate that we're working with.
Fox's Jared Halpern on Capitol Hill. Thanks, as always, for your time.
Absolutely.
This is Van Hipp with your Fox News commentary coming up.
He was only at the White House for 11 days.
I love the president. I obviously love the country. Look at my life experience here in the country. And so it's an honor to be here.
Though Anthony Scaramucci admitted as he took over as communications director, he wasn't a Trump supporter right away. Even called him a hack during the campaign.
I should have never said that about him. So, Mr. President, if you're listening, I personally apologize for the 50th time for saying that.
But that wasn't Scaramucci's undoing. He clashed right away with advisor Steve Bannon and then Chief of Staff Reince Priebus.
Reince and I have been personal friends for 6 years. We are a little bit like brothers, where we rough each other up once in a while.
Well, Scaramucci, in his zeal to get rid of White House leakers, made vulgar comments about both of them in a New Yorker interview, and that ultimately led new Chief of Staff John Kelly to fire him. Scaramucci writes about that and the man he served in a new book just out, Trump, the Blue-Collar President.
Some of the stuff I went through was obviously very painful, and it took a little while, and it was a stomach punch and a knockdown. But one chapter in the book, I was in the White House for 11 days, but one chapter in the book is the 12th day. What do you do when you're knocked on the canvas, you've been excoriated in the media and ripped up? How do you pick yourself up off the canvas, dust yourself off, and get on with life?
Well, how did you do that?
Well, I think the number one thing is to recognize not to take yourself that seriously. At the end of the day, you have to require, if you're going to go into politics, if you're going to go into something that high profile, you have to detach yourself a little bit. Otherwise, you take everything too seriously. And so you have to have a little bit of an aplomb and savoir-faire and sense of humor. And then, you know, thank God, you know, and I write about this in the book, I had some issues related to my wife. We were struggling with our marriage. We were almost on the edge of divorce. And so I was able to repair that and bring the family back together and return back to my business. So what I talk about is a couple of days thereafter, I'm walking on the Santa Monica promenade with my 25-year-old son. And he's got his arm around me. He's like, hey, Dad, are you going to be okay? Because it was very rough stuff going on in the media. And I said to him, hey, you know, it's not a health issue. It certainly looks rough today, but you watch how I come out of this in a year or two. It's about resilience and tenacity. And look, I got 5 kids. And so you can't stay on the canvas too long, Dave. That's part of the message of this book.
Were you a fish out of water? Were you in the doing the wrong thing? You're a business guy, hedge fund guy. What are you doing as the communications director for the White House?
Well, I wasn't well suited for that. And so that's one of the reasons why I was trying to recruit Bill Shine, who actually used to work at the Fox News Corporation. My first move was to tell the president, let's bring somebody in here that I think is really good at this stuff.
And he's still there.
Yeah, and he's still there. He started a year after me, though. I guess he was waiting for the building to stop shaking because of all the commotion between Priebus, Bannon, Spicer, myself, and all that sort of stuff. But no, I was clearly a fish out of water. I got a call from Stephen telling me that I had a zero chance to be the White House communications director on that day.
Okay.
At which point I said to him, well, last time I checked, you know, president is not in front of your last name. So the guy that has president in front of his last name, I think I got it at 100% that I'll be the communications director, but let's see.
And then you knew going in you were having a
The point was I should have never I should have, you know, read the tea leaves, so to speak. I guess that was one of my mistakes because I'm a Wall Street person and a New Yorker. Had they just come to me and say, hey, Anthony, listen, we actually hate your guts. We don't want anything to do with you and we don't want you in the White House. I know the president offered you the job, but we don't want you to have it. That would have been,
You would have said no to the president?
Well, I don't, you know, like, it's like this, you know, I could have, after Kelly fired me, I could have gone to the president and asked for a presidential pardon, but that would have been the right thing to do. He's the chief of staff.
Right.
If Priebus had just leveled with me and said, look, man, I don't want you anywhere near this place. I want you as far away as possible. Instead of telling me one lie after the next, and I write about it in the book, I got my ego. And I got my pride in the way of my decision making. So the minute he blocked me, I got in a 4-point stance ready to rush the quarterback. And so that was my mistake. I own it. I should not have taken the job in hindsight, obviously.
Ryan Spreeva is gone. Steve Bannon gone. John Kelly, though, still there, supposedly going to be chief of staff all the way until the end of the first term, at least. You don't have a lot of good things to write about him, do you?
Well, listen, I was honest. So, you know, look, people will say, well, it's personal because he fired you. It's really not that personal. I've been fired before. Have no problem with the fact that he fired me. The fact that other staff members asked me to come back to the White House to help them on something and he took my name off the list, I thought that was like a little cheap. It felt like a middle school action.
Uh-huh.
I don't think the fact that he was in the U.S. Marine Corps, which I applaud his service, gives him the right to act like that. Okay, this is a civilian organization. It's not the Marines. That military style has hurt the White House. It's hurt the morale inside the building. It's caused many people to leave. I got fired, but there's other people that have left because they can't take that operating style.
But he must have a good relationship with the president then.
Does he, though?
I don't know. You're closer to it than me, but he's still there.
To me, it doesn't look like that from my angle, but maybe he does because he's still there.
Right.
We'll have to see how it shakes out. But I think their personality – I've run two reasonably successful companies, pretty good evaluator of talent and pretty good evaluator of mixing and matching personalities to get a team to work well together. It doesn't strike me that those two guys like each other. Maybe I'm wrong.
Donald Trump, how is this guy – a blue-collar president, a guy with gold-plated everything in an apartment in Midtown Manhattan with millions of dollars, not even relatable to anybody in Ohio or Kansas or anywhere else. How does it happen?
So that's why I picked that title, because, you know, he's got a golden toilet seat and his apartment looks like Louis XIV smoked crystal meth and then designed the apartment. And so, you know, I'm like, okay, this will really upset all the liberals. But I picked that title because he got 62.8 or 9 million votes for a reason. Many blue-collar people felt that he was their advocate and felt that he was their champion. Now, people may not like that, but what I say to Democrats, this is an all-party, all-season book. If you want to beat Donald Trump, you should read the 304 pages that I wrote because I'm giving you a very good exposition of how he stole your base. He literally took the mantle of the Republican Party against the establishment, and he reached into your party as Democrats and stole your blue-collar base. So you may not like the fact that I'm calling a blue-collar president. I'm hoping that you don't like that. I'm hoping that it sets your hair on fire and you send some more Twitter hate my way because it'll help me sell books. But let me just tell you something. You want to beat this guy, you better understand what he did, and you better think about changing your operating model or changing your product come 2020, or he's going to beat you again.
How does he operate? You're friends with him. You've dealt with him. You write in the book about him. What does he do that makes this work?
So it's a lot like that old Apple computer billboard that we used to see in New York where they put a picture up of somebody and on the bottom. It says, think different. He is the consummate person that thinks different. He's not the normal person. He's a very aesthetic person. He assimilates information through more of a visual experience and more from people. I think he's very good, to arguably one of the best that I've seen, at reading people and dialing into what their expertise are and what their opinions are and how to synthesize those.
His critics say he knows what to say to people, what they want to hear, but he doesn't actually believe it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't see that as much as I see somebody who can tap into the pulse of people that you wouldn't expect him to be able to tap into the pulse of. And I think it has to do with some of his upbringing, frankly. You know, his father started from a humble beginning. I write about that in the book. I'm just trying to tell the other side of the story that there's a compassionate side to him. There's a bloviator side to him. Don't get me wrong.
I mean, the tweets, we see it every day in tweets.
Alec Baldwin portrays that. I'm not a big fan of calling people horse face. I'm not a big fan of the stylistic judgments that he's making on Twitter. But I am trying to represent why people like him. I'm trying to be very observational in the book. Why did the neighborhood I grew up in vote for Donald Trump? Why did my cousin who's a clammer or my other cousin who's in the auto glass installation business fall in love with Trump and still support Trump to this day?
Another thing that drives his critics crazy is he plays with the facts. So a lot of fact checkers who every Trump rally, there's a whole thing of fact checks and tweets, fact checks.
Yeah.
They say he doesn't tell the truth.
Well, some of that he's doing on purpose because he knows that's going to rile up all the left wingers and it's going to make all those people crazy. And some of that he does tongue in cheek, which he knows galvanizes his base. And some of that he does because he's a little bit like my grandfather, where the old cliche is apropos to Trump. Why let the truth get in the way of a good story? And so he's a great embellisher. He's a real estate developer. He's a condo salesperson. He's developed some ability to be quite exaggerating in some of the things that he's doing.
And so when he says this is the greatest economy we've ever had, he knows he's not.
Yeah.
He knows it's just a device.
He knows it. I think he knows it's a rhetorical device. I think he's he likes doing that because he knows it upsets people when he's doing it. That's my honest opinion. But
2 weeks before the midterm elections, he's not on the ballot, but he really is of a lot of Democrats running against him specifically. What do you think is going
to
happen?
It does appear to me that he'll lose the House just looking at the tea leaves, but he's going to probably gain one or two seats, certainly going to keep the Senate. And so that'll be a divided government. My business, Wall Street, actually likes divided government.
He was all about how the stock market was breaking records, but lately it's not been so good.
Okay, so that would be something I would have cautioned him on. If you're a cheerleader for the market on the way up, unfortunately, you're going to own the millstone of the market on the way down.
Do you talk to the president much? Do you get a chance to?
You know, I haven't talked to him in a while. I'm not one of those fibbers, like trying to pretend that I talk to him. I mean, I have no real reason to talk to him. Obviously, he calls me. I'll return his call. I think the last time I talked to him was like late July. I'm not just going to call him for the sake of calling him so I can tell you as my favorite radio host that I talked to the guy so I make myself sound like more important. I'm just not going to do that.
Really? I'm your favorite one?
You're my favorite one today. Right now at 12:30 and 57 seconds.
You're
my favorite one today. I'm going to another radio show in about 10 minutes, and that guy's going to be my favorite.
Of course. The book, Trump, the Blue-Collar President, Anthony Scaramucci. Good luck with it. Thank you very much for joining us.
Real great to be here again.
Enjoy your show. Thank you.
This is Tyrus.
I'm Tommy Lahren.
And Britt McHenry. And we're excited to be a part of Fox Nation.
Because now more than ever, we need powerful voices.
Different from anything you've heard before.
Fox Nation.
Opinion done right.
Go to FoxNation.com and sign up.
Now.
It's time for your Fox News commentary.
Van Hip.
What's on your mind?
America now more than ever needs Harry Truman Democrats. Both of my grandfathers were Harry Truman Democrats. They loved this country and believed in American exceptionalism. They believed in a strong America and did not apologize for it. They understood that the reason the states came together to begin with was to provide for the common defense. They believed in working people because they themselves came from the blue-collar ranks. They believed that we are all children of God. They believed in the rule of law rather than mob rule. And they understood that small businesses, not big business, are the backbone of the free enterprise system. Harry Truman was a proud Democrat, and his campaign against a do-nothing Republican Congress in 1948 helped him win a full presidential term of his own. Harry Truman, however, would work with Republicans when it was in America's interest. In fact, when President Truman had a chance to appoint his first justice to the Supreme Court in 1945, he nominated Republican U.S. Senator Harold Burton as a bipartisan gesture. The U.S. Senate unanimously approved Burton's nomination. Other Democrats carried on the Harry Truman tradition. They would not oppose a Republican president or a piece of Republican legislation simply because it was Republican. The test was, is it right for America? Harry Truman Democrats realized that they could do this and still be good Democrats because in the end, a good Democrat wanted what is best for the nation. These days, it is tough to find a Harry Truman Democrat. To be fair, though, there are a few still left. Jay Johnson, who served as Secretary of Homeland Security for President Obama, is one of them. He stood up to calls from his own party to abolish the Immigration and Customs Enforcement Agency, ICE, and stated calls to abolish ICE only serve to sow even greater division in the American public. Another contemporary Harry Truman Democrat is Alan Dershowitz. Dershowitz, who supported both Hillary Clinton and President Obama in their campaigns, has bucked the party establishment and defended President Trump on numerous occasions. He even authored the book, The Case Against Impeaching Trump. Obviously, Dershowitz doesn't follow the script of the Democratic Party's daily talking points. Former Senator Joe Lieberman of Connecticut is another who fits the mold of a Harry Truman Democrat. Strong on national defense, Lieberman consistently worked with Republicans to promote America's national security and foreign policy interest. They are the kinds of Democrats who will work with Republicans when it is in America's national interest, but who will oppose Republicans when it goes against their core values. Regardless of party or ideology, we are all Americans, and we are all in this together. We want to be able to provide for our families and ensure a better future for our children. We want to be able to worship our God in our own way, and we want to be safe and secure. Harry Truman Democrats understand this. These are the kinds of Democrats we need more of, working with Republicans to put the interest of our country, not party, first. I'm Van Hip.
You have been listening to the Fox News Rundown. Stay up to date by subscribing to Fox News Radio's hourly newscast at foxnewspodcasts.com. And for up-to-the-minute news, visit foxnews.com.